Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani, all rights reserved. Chapter 19. Callie stopped at the grocery store and picked up fresh fruit, vegetables, and other nutritious items, phase one of yet another plan to put some order into her life. However, she felt that this one might work because of its simplicity. Number 1. Eat well. Number 2. Drink lots of water. Number 3. Get plenty of sleep. Number 4. Clean up the cat room. Number 5. Clean out Billy's house. The fact that the last year had effectively removed anyone or anything which might possibly distract her also boded well for its success. It took Callie so much longer than she expected to clean the cat room that halfway through the process she felt obligated to call Joe to see how anxious he was to rent Billy's place again. "No hurry," he assured her. "Take your time. Or, if you'd rather, I can clean Billy's for you." "I promised him I'd do it myself, and I want to do it."
"Closure?" he asked.
"If such a thing exists, yes."
Whether closure existed or not, she did find cleaning the cat room therapeutic. At first, just the hard labor involved in scraping dried cat food off the walls and floors and repairing the dents kept her mind occupied. By the time she touched up the paint, then washed all the drapes, bedding, and toys and stored them in plastic bags, she felt more as if an era than the world had ended. Although she had no idea what she intended to use the room for, she did know that all those windows, shelves, and benches made it a perfect place for plants. While others covet New England's coast for its summers and autumn foliage, Kelly loved it most between late fall when the leaf-peeping tourists disappeared and early winter before snow fell to attract skiers on their way to the mountains. During that brief window of time, Addison reclaimed itself. As if to celebrate this all-too-brief interlude, Penn kept a small selection of flowering houseplants in the granary's gardening section. "I'll take one of everything," she kidded him as she entered the store.
"Where you been hiding?"
He gave her a welcoming hug. "I've been worried."
"Just getting some stuff cleaned up at home that I let go when Billy got sick," she explained. "Now I need some plants to brighten things up a little."
It was the first time she had been in the granary since Billy's memorial service, and the place looked empty without all those streamers and pictures. She focused her attention on the flowers to distract herself from such thoughts. "I definitely want some cyclamen and African violets," she told Penn as she made her selection. "And I'd like some ferns, too, if you have them."
"Don't get much call for them, but I can give you the name of my Boston supplier," Penn volunteered. "I'm sure they'd have just about anything you want."
The idea of visiting such a place greatly appealed to Callie, and she carefully wrote down the details he gave her as he wrapped her plants in newspaper to protect them from the cold. "Given any more thought to setting up a practice here?" he asked casually as he tucked the wrapped plants snugly into a cardboard box.
"Yes and no," she admitted. "I'd like to practice, but I also want time to do some photography again. Seeing all of Billy's pictures reminded me how much we can communicate that way."
She didn't tell Penn that she had become almost obsessed with the idea of pictures since Billy and the cats had died. Prior to then, the fact that her parents had stripped the house of all mementos didn't bother her so much because Billy and the cats linked her to them. When she lost them, too, only her parents' ashes remained. How could she find the answer she craved in a pile of ashes? But that wasn't the only reason she wanted to get out her camera again. Seeing Billy's pictures had also reminded her of something Alicia had said to her years ago that she had vigorously denied at the time, even though she knew it was true. You wanted to be a portrait photographer because you wanted to control your parents, to transform them into Callie-pleasing images that would never change, her therapist had said. Callie knew she literally tried to do that to her parents with her camera. But reflection on events since her return to Addison made it clear that she figuratively did that to anyone who tried to get close to her. Some, like Billy, she made larger than life. Others, like David, she reduced to mere snapshots. Those who threatened to get too close, like Joe, she diminished to wallet-sized proportions. "Don't see why you couldn't practice part-time and do your photography the rest, Callie." Penn's remark refocused Kelly's attention on the present, where his intensely hopeful expression made him look so like a conniving elf, she laughed. I'd need to hire a contractor to convert that space to a working clinic, she reminded him, picking up her plants. Are you sure you're up for that? Go ahead and hire one, he grinned. Can't be any worse than having snakes loose in the place. A few days later, Kelly drove to Boston in search of plants and discovered a greenery-filled warehouse that enchanted her as much as a similar space filled with animals would have. Rows of flowering plants gave way to rows of those known for their foliage. Leaves of all different colors, sizes, and shapes grew from an equally varied array of stalks and stems. Water-storing succulents spanned the spectrum from fleshy leaf jade plants to prickly cacti. She felt like Alice in Wonderland. 2 hours later, she commenced to drive home in high spirits, the van full of plants. In addition to a lovely assortment of flowering ones, she had purchased bird's nest, deer's foot, hare's foot, rabbit's foot, staghorn, holly, and Boston ferns. These she carefully wedged around two large jade plants and a rubber tree, Ficus elastica decora. Rubber trees normally didn't appeal to her, but this one looked so sad off by itself in the corner, it immediately caught her attention. What's wrong with the rubber tree? She asked a roving clerk. Got accidentally OD'd with plant food, he answered, on its way to that big greenhouse in the sky. Every once in a while, Kelly opened her mouth, and words fell out of it as if she were experiencing some sort of verbal out-of-body experience. Her brain stepped aside, and then this alien said crazy things like, May I have the plant? I'd be happy to pay you for it. Naturally, the clerk looked at her oddly. However, she couldn't tell him that the plant reminded her of her second-grade pet show disaster. All the kids were allowed to bring their pets, and she didn't have one. When she complained to Bernice about this, Bernice said, Why don't you take Teddy? Teddy was a 2-foot-tall, stuffed bear. Callie begged her mother to buy her at a church rummage sale when she was 3, because she didn't want to go to nursery school alone. His cheap fabric eyes and mouth had long disappeared, and years of her tears and remnants of the food she tried to share with him had stiffened his brown fur. He was a wonderful friend, but he did not, in any way, shape, or form, resemble a live pet. However, Kelly so desperately wanted a pet that she told herself he would pass with a little cosmetic help. While Bernice cooked her meat and vegetable paste, Kelly sneaked into Venus's makeup stash and drew eyes on Teddy with eyeliner, mascara, and eyebrow pencil. Unfortunately, the makeup smeared on his bristly fur, and he looked like he had 2 black holes in his head. Seeking something more permanent, as well as more colorful, to animate him, Callie then gave the bear 2 large, oval, flamingo-pink eyes and an equally large, royal ruby mouth, using Venus's nail polish. Satisfied, she swung him by his hind leg out her bedroom window to dry so her mother wouldn't detect the odor. If Bernice noticed a change in the bear's appearance, she never mentioned it. The Saturday of the pet show, Bernice dropped Callie off at the schoolyard while she went grocery shopping. As soon as Callie saw all the other children with their real pets, she knew she had made a terrible mistake. Teddy wasn't alive and never would be. While everyone showed their youngest, oldest, cutest, or silliest pet, she sat on him, covering as much of him as she could with her skirt so no one could see him and know what a stupid little kid she was. But she felt guilty about hiding Teddy, too. He couldn't help that he was ugly and wasn't alive. He did his best, and he was the only pet she had. As soon as the other kids went to get their punch and cookies, she ran to the grocery store, put Teddy in the car, and waited on the curb for Bernice. Did you get a prize? Bernice asked. Kelly told her no, but later learned that they gave prizes to everyone when they got their punch and cookies, even the kids who came without a pet. Ever since then, she'd been on the lookout for Teddies, rejects who would win a prize if only someone stuck around long enough and believed in them. The rubber tree easily fit that category, and she knew she must take it. When Callie arrived home, common sense told her she should move the healthy plants into the house first rather than the rubber tree, but she didn't because she felt so sorry for it. The plant only had 3 limp leaves on its 4-foot stem, and all of them looked like they could fall off at any minute. Because of its fragile condition, she wrapped it in a blanket and rushed it into the plant room, where she placed it in the warmest, draft-free spot. only after she had arranged all the other plants and actually looked at the botanical abomination claiming the place of honor in her otherwise aesthetically pleasing room, did she realize what she had done. "Oh, God, help me," she groaned. "I'm doing it again." She was about to fling all the plants into the cold to die and nip this detrimental Uncle Wiggily trail in the bud when a sudden, wonderful thought occurred to her. She didn't name the plant. True, she did personally identify with it, but only in a remote, allegorical, childish, and thus meaningless kind of way. Had she named it, that would have been quite a different matter. Feeling enormously relieved that she had never fallen back into her old habits nor needlessly sacrificed her new plants, she carefully washed the tree's sickly leaves and gave it one of Alicia's pep talks. She didn't know if this conversation helped the plant or not, but at least it didn't look any worse when she headed off to Billy's the next morning. Before Callie did anything else at Billy's, she loaded all of his photographs into the van and delivered them to the library. Penn and Joe had put the pictures from the granary in a separate box, and she would be lying if she said she wasn't tempted to keep some of them for herself, especially the one of Billy and her parents. But she had promised to donate them all, and besides, no one else had the opportunity to pull out their favorites, either. Deborah Kane greeted her warmly and helped carry the boxes from the van into the small room used by the Historical Society. "I can't tell you how excited everyone is about the pictures," she confided. "There's so much we can learn from them." "Billy would be happy to know that," Callie replied, wiping some dust from her hands. "When I had to censor some of them, he felt sorry that they might have hurt someone." "Billy never could have hurt anyone," the librarian insisted. "He trusted us to do the right thing. If he caught us doing something wrong, well, that was our fault, not his." Noticing how uncomfortable the other woman looked, Callie attempted to ease her mind. "Yeah," she laughed ruefully. "He caught me lying naked on the beach." "You're kidding," Deborah exclaimed. Callie shook her head. "Worse, I was alone. My husband had just run off with a topless dancer." The librarian laughed and whispered, "That's better than being dumb enough to believe a vacationing priest who told you his bishop didn't understand him." The two women laughed again, and Callie felt so comfortable she wondered what it would be like to have a real girlfriend, someone she could go out to lunch with and talk to about all the things that parents, men, and kids just didn't understand. She'd never had a real girlfriend, only school or work-related acquaintances who disappeared when she or they moved on. Alicia kept telling Callie that she was her girlfriend, but paying someone to discuss her problems in a color-coordinated office wasn't in the same league with someone she could blab with for hours about anything. Maybe someday she would invite Deborah Kane to lunch.
You've been listening to an excerpt from Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. For more information about this and other books by the author, please visit mmilani.com. The song Irritations into Pearls was composed and performed by Jeff Firestone. For more information about Jeff and his music, please contact him at retromusic@verizon.net. Thanks for listening.